The Utah Jazz crowd roared with delight as the 18-year-old rookie launched his fourth consecutive airball in the 1997 playoffs. Most would have crumbled under that humiliation. Kobe Bryant went straight to a high school gym that night and started shooting. He returned the next morning, and the morning after that. This wasn't just about redemption, it was the birth of something larger. What emerged from those airballs became the Mamba mentality, a philosophy that would transcend basketball and redefine how we think about excellence itself. The Mamba mentality wasn't motivation, it was methodology. While others chased results, Bryant obsessed over process. At 17, he established a ritual that would define two decades. 90-minute weightlifting sessions 4 days weekly, followed immediately by shooting practice. No shortcuts, no trends, just compound exercises building strength one muscle group at a time. Those infamous midnight workouts weren't heroic. They were strategic problem-solving. Bryant refused to sacrifice either basketball or family time, so he sacrificed sleep instead. While his daughters slept, he trained. By the time they woke, he was home for breakfast. His preparation extended beyond physical training into intellectual warfare. Bryant devoured game film, analyzing not just what happened, but why and what could have happened. Every possession became a chess problem with multiple solutions. This gave him an eerie advantage. Nothing on the court surprised him. When facing Allen Iverson or Tracy McGrady, he'd already mentally rehearsed a dozen scenarios. His body simply executed what his mind had already solved. Most athletes train to avoid injury. Bryant trained to play through it. When he fractured his finger in December 2009, his response to trainer Gary Vitti was immediate. Is it going to get better? Told no, he replied, "Then there's nothing we can do, and it can't get worse, so tape it up and let's go." This wasn't machismo, it was logic. Bryant understood that pain signals imbalance elsewhere in the body. Ankle stiffness could cascade into knee, hip, and back problems. After severely spraining his ankle during the 2000 finals, Bryant took up tap dancing that summer to strengthen his ankles while improving foot speed and rhythm. His ankles never became a chronic issue again. His recovery protocols were equally meticulous. While teammates rushed to shower after games, Bryant applied ice to his knees, shoulder, and feet for exactly 20 minutes. On particularly stiff days, he'd use contrast therapy with precise intervals: 4 minutes cold, 3 minutes hot, 3 minutes cold, 2 minutes hot, continuing with decreasing intervals before finishing with one final minute in cold water. Every detail mattered because every detail accumulated. At six, Bryant despised weakness. He brushed his teeth left-handed, wrote left-handed, forced ambidexterity until he could dribble, shoot, and pivot either way. This childhood obsession became an adult advantage. Defenders couldn't exploit tendencies he'd eliminated. When he injured his right index finger in 2009, Bryant reconstructed his shooting mechanics at age 31, shifting his release to his middle finger. Most players would have waited. Bryant adapted through thousands of repetitions and kept playing. His approach was strategic brilliance. Design a game so complete that knowing his preferences didn't help. Sure, he favored his right hand, but could easily go left. You understood his rhythm, but he deliberately varied his pace. Against Paul Pierce, who used his body as a shield, Bryant would pressure Pierce's back with his left forearm, position his left leg to prevent spins, his right leg to cut off drives. His right hand remained ready to capitalize on mistakes. Every defensive possession was calculated sequence, not instinctive reaction. He even studied the referee's handbook, identifying dead zones where officials couldn't see certain actions, letting him exploit blind spots for holds and minor violations. Bending the rules? Yes. Smart? Undeniably. The narrative of Kobe as selfish misses his sophisticated approach. His challenging leadership style was intentional. He believed discomfort drives growth. "I dared people to be their best selves," he explained. He studied each teammate's history, goals, and insecurities to touch the right nerve at the right time. His relationship with Shaquille O'Neal revealed this strategic thinking. While winning three consecutive championships, their public tensions weren't entirely organic. Bryant admitted they deliberately amplified conflicts to keep teammates invested and competitive. Even with a dominant center, Bryant understood his role, creating easy opportunities by drawing defenders away, then finding the open pocket to pass through. His appreciation for complementary skills showed with Pau Gasol, whom he called his favorite teammate. They connected through shared interests beyond basketball, Spanish language, literature, theater, and won two more championships. Bryant valued Lamar Odom as the glue, Derek Fisher as the patient leader offsetting his intensity. He understood greatness required chemistry, not just talent. April 12, 2013. Bryant felt his Achilles tendon tear and watched it curl up his leg. He tried to walk it off, took his free throws, then left the court, shaking his head at his wife, who immediately recognized the severity. Bryant called this injury his personal Mount Everest. Before it happened, he'd been contemplating retirement, feeling his body wear down, but he refused to let the injury dictate his exit. He would dictate it himself. He embarked on grueling rehabilitation that eventually returned him to the court. His final NBA game encapsulated everything. Upon arriving at Staples Center, he noticed the arena's somber energy and took responsibility for changing it. "I preferred celebration and life," he recalled. After suiting up, he realized his legs weren't fresh. The night would either be spectacular or disastrous. He laughed, confident in his preparation for playing on tired legs. Once the game started, his focus was complete. The result? 60 points at age 37, outscoring the entire opposing team in the fourth quarter. What started as a Twitter hashtag became a framework for achievement transcending basketball. Business leaders apply Bryant's principles to organizational challenges. Artists embrace his work ethic in creative pursuits. The Mamba mentality has become shorthand for prioritizing process over results, preparation over talent, and relentless improvement over momentary success. Bryant's message was uncomfortably simple. True greatness requires genuine obsession. Many claim to want it but won't make necessary sacrifices, the tremendous time, difficult choices, and understanding from loved ones who sacrifice alongside you. What separates all-time greats from merely great performers is their ability to self-assess, diagnose weaknesses, and transform flaws into strengths. Bryant pointed to Kevin Durant's evolution. Early struggles with pull-up jumpers and post moves were systematically eliminated within 2 years. Great coaches teach you how to think rather than what to do, arming you with tools to find solutions yourself. This emphasis on problem-solving makes the Mamba mentality applicable anywhere excellence is the goal. In a world obsessed with shortcuts, Bryant's legacy offers uncomfortable truth. Greatness requires waking when others sleep, studying when others rest, continuing when others quit. The Mamba mentality isn't about being Kobe Bryant, it's about approaching your craft with obsessive dedication. Focus on process, eliminate weaknesses, prepare obsessively, never stop improving. That's the mentality. That's the legacy.